And so I want to connect these unpleasant events to stress, because I'm sure you've kind of already seen that connection for yourself, that unpleasant events are related to stress. And if we look at stress, kind of like how it arises, or the primal function of fight or flight reactivity, we see that it's often this response to a perceived threatening situation, or just like too much, too soon, happening very quickly. And so the body goes into this defense default mechanism called fight or flight reactivity, where blood pressure increases, the heart begins to pound, blood is shunted to the larger muscles in the body, pupils are dilated, awareness starts expanding to see everything that could be perceived as a threat, immune system is suppressed, digestive tract is suppressed, becomes very difficult to focus on small tasks because we need to have this expansive awareness. And so, you just look at that in the context of a zebra running away from a lion, right? It allows them to either fight the lion or flee from the lion. In that case, they're going to flee. However, what tends to happen is once the zebras have fled from the lion, and the lion, unfortunately, maybe takes down one of their friends, they kind of just go back to what they were doing. And you can see this in the footage where they'll be running, 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 and then, all right, the hunt stops. And then the lion is like 50 feet from them, and they're just at the water hole doing what they were doing, because they know there's no more threat, and they come back to this homeostasis. And there's a whole book called Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. but as human beings, what happens is we can get caught in that same pattern of stress reactivity, whether it's like we hit the snooze button too long, we realize, oh my God, we're late to work, or we get an email from our boss that says, see me, or somebody says something to us that really just rattles us. And we can get caught in that pattern of fight or flight for very long periods of time. And it's not a biological response that was designed to be there for long periods of time, right? A few minutes, run away, get what you need to, and then settle and come back to homeostasis. But we can perpetuate it through thoughts. For minutes, hours, days, weeks, months. And we can see the consequences of that over time, physically, psychologically, emotionally. This is why, often during finals week at school, there's this like wave of people getting sick because the immune system is suppressed when we're stressed out, and everyone's stressed over exams. Or why often, like, we could walk around and our shoulders would just feel tight up here. Why are we always tight up here? Well, one of the symptoms of fight or flight reactivity is we do this. Why do we do this? It protects the neck. It's a defense mechanism. So we're often walking around like this all throughout the day, kind of protecting ourselves, and we don't really need to. Just kind of well, sometimes maybe we do, but often we don't. It's just like this perceived sense of threat because we're caught in this stress reactivity. And so let's just look at what is stress. We kind of explore it like physiologically, but one of the most basic definitions that we have is when our perceived demands are greater than our perceived resources to meet those demands, right? Perceived demands greater than perceived resources. So what is the key word there? I hear you saying it. You're saying perceived, right? Yeah, right. And so why is that the key word? Because often what we perceive to be demanding could be very different than what is actually demanding, right? So when you're in the shower in the morning, are you actually in the shower? Okay, Corey, not sure where you're going with this one. So I have no doubt that your physical body is in the shower, but if you really look at it, is your mind in the shower? Chances are it's someplace else entirely, or maybe you're bringing things into the shower with you. Maybe your boss is in the shower with you. Maybe your inbox is in the shower. Your kids are in the shower. They might literally be in the shower with you. And so here we go. We're standing in a shower, and now our perceived demands go from standing here to, I gotta take the kids to soccer practice. I gotta make breakfast. I gotta beat the traffic. I gotta have that conversation with my boss, right? Who the heck has the resources to be able to meet those demands? No one. And the thing is, the brain is not very good at distinguishing the difference between those thoughts and the reality of those things actually happening, especially when it's caught in those thoughts. And so perceived demands go up to here. Now, if you really tune into what is actually going on in this moment, you're just standing in a shower. You're just rubbing soap on your body. And most people have the resources to be able to meet those demands. And so by tuning into what is actually going on in this moment, we end up simplifying the moment in a sense. And we can see that often what we're doing is creating or catastrophizing or getting caught up in everything that has to get done that often isn't actually happening in this moment. And so like a couple of good pushbacks to that might be, well, Corey, I like to think in the shower. You're saying like I can't think and plan and film. No, absolutely not. You can absolutely plan while you're in the shower. But would you agree that there's a distinction between the, you know, between being caught in your thoughts and being grounded and thinking? I think a lot of the times what's happening is we're just completely swept away by thought as if they're happening in reality. And what we're training here in this mindfulness practice, especially in meditation, is like, how can we sit here? How can we be grounded and notice thoughts as they come and go and not have to take them so seriously? The more that we do that, the more you could think about whatever the heck you want. And it there's not the same emotional valence. They don't lead to the same kind of stress reactivity. The other thing pushback might be, well, you know, being stress-free in the shower is not a problem for me, Corey. What about when you know, I am at work and like I have 100 emails to take care of? So like things that really need my attention. So let's look at that as well. Let's say you get to work, you have 100 emails to take care of and they need your attention by 5 p.m. So that's a lot that you got to get done. You could fight it, you could push it, you could get angry about it, but it's not going to change the situation. Eventually, you're going to have to sit down and do that one email. And so when you're doing that first email, are you just doing that first email? Chances are you are thinking about the 99 other emails that you have to take care of and how much you hate email and how much you hate the person that invented email. And so here we go from just one email to now 100 emails and everything you're going to do to the person that invented email and how pissed off you are. But, and nobody has the resources to be able to meet those demands. But if you really tune in and say like, what am I actually doing? You're just doing one email. And not just one email, it's just one sentence. And not just one sentence, it's just one word. And everybody has, most people have the resources to be able to do that. And, you know, what we're doing through this mindfulness thing, is not necessarily getting it to the point where we're just going to love doing emails or that stressful situations disappear, no. But we can refine our attention to the point where we see that, like, what I actually have to work with right now is not necessarily as complicated or as much of a catastrophe as perhaps I think it is. Sometimes it actually is. And sometimes life really does require us to take action and to change things. And especially coming from, right, like an able-bodied, straight white male, there are certain stresses in my life that I am just not going to experience, that other people will experience. And it would be rude and inconsiderate of me to just... and misleading of me to say that this practice is just like anytime you notice a stressor come up, just, you know, come back to the breath and reground yourself. And because that's not what this practice is about, and that's not what I'm suggesting at all. And this isn't to say that straight white men don't have stress, but there's a particular kind of privilege that comes with that. And then just being in this mind and this body, particularly this body, there are going to be stressors that I don't have to experience that other people do. And sometimes there are just real deep systemic issues that need our attention, that based on who you are or where you're at or what you're dealing with right now, the response to that stress is not necessarily like, oh, let me breathe through it. It's like, no, we need to make some changes. And that's an appropriate response. And that is a response coming out of mindfulness, listening in deeply to what do I actually need right now. So I want to make sure that that is understood. But there's also a lot of times where we're just creating unnecessary stress by being caught up in our own minds and creating an unnecessary catastrophe. And that's where this mindfulness thing can come in, drop into what is actually going on in just this moment and simplify it for ourselves. Yeah. Marty Seligman, the former president of the American Psychological Association, says, it's not the potential stressor itself, but how we perceive it and how we handle it that determines whether or not it will lead to stress. So that's giving you a lot of autonomy in this practice. And you can trust that what we're doing through the meditation practice is cultivating that ability to begin to discern, is this a stressor that I need to respond to or react to? Or is this something that I can kind of just check in, like, what's going on? What are my thoughts around this? And how could I reground myself?